copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
I am talking for a little while about ministry and mission in a media world. Trying to cover a lot of ground in not very long. There have been extraordinary shifts in the last half century, but not just in the Western world, but globally. And one of the central factors, in fact, I think I would argue quite strongly the central factor in all of that, is the changing nature of media. Back in 1967, the great media commentator Marshall McLuhan said that time has ceased, space has vanished. We now live in a global village. It's a very famous statement. Bill Gates picked it up in a major speech he gave where he said the internet is the global, the town square, the global village of today. But McLuhan was saying that back in the early days of television as a really mass medium. Well, I mean, not early days, it was established, but long, 30 years before the World Wide Web was invented by Tim Berners-Lee. You just think of the extraordinary change that we have experienced, even in the last 20 odd years. Here we all are, right across the world. I was looking through what a wide distribution of places we have on our network just yesterday. We have a very good balance from all over the place. More Norwegians than anybody else, but there are not that many of them. And that's fantastic. We can do this because of the way that media has become so part of life. Can you imagine what a pandemic like this would have been like even 10 years ago? Never mind 20 years ago. We just couldn't have done this kind of thing. But it does mean that the media constantly present themselves to us, that we are surrounded by media technologies, we are in contact with many media channels, and we hear countless media messages. And so Kelton Cobb says that we are presented with a parade of alternative worlds. And thanks to always-on technology, that parade of alternative worlds has constant access into our homes, into our families, and of course into our minds as well. So we need to think how media changes society. This is a move, this domination of media is called mediatization. So how exactly does media change society? Schultz, in a very significant paper about mediatization as an analytical concept, he talks about four ways in which the media have transformed society. Firstly, media extend our communication capabilities, and our presence with each other while physically separate this afternoon is graphic testament to how it helps us to overcome our spatial separation and our temporal separation as well. I couldn't watch Peter today, but I'll watch Peter tonight, so there'll still be some kind of connection. There is still a little temporal separation when singing Happy Birthday together. But nevertheless, it overcomes all sorts of separations because it extends our capabilities. Secondly, media substitute for social activities and institutions. So not necessarily completely, but some of the things that have used to happen offline now happen online. They happen in a media sphere rather than in a physical space. I can't imagine that European Leadership Forum will remain as an online event, though I hope they continue to have some online aspects to it. But at least during lockdown, media has completely substituted for church and home groups and ELF and all kinds of other things, for friendship meetups, for dinners with friends. So that changes their character. It's great to be together, but we're not together. It's not the same as being in the corridors in Poland, unable to hear what anybody else is saying because there's so much noise. So there's a lot of substitution. Thirdly, media activities merge with other other media activities and also with non-media activities. So there is no clear distinction between one part of life and another part of life anymore. We go to church, and I always use my Bible on my phone rather than a paper Bible, because I want to have other translations open in front of me, particularly if we're in the Old Testament. And so I'm not going online, but I'm still depending on the media on my phone rather than on the old-fashioned paper medium. So there's a blurring of boundaries there at a very simple level, but it happens in all sorts of aspects of life that there's no clear distinctions, and there's a leakage, a seepage from one into another. And then the fourth aspect is that media demands to be accommodated within everything else. The institutions within society now cannot ignore media in the way that they function, in their economics, and of course, especially in their communication. So just before lockdown, I was doing some writing in the coffee shop on Southampton University campus, and there were a group of students there, all with their phones out. They were talking to each other. They were taking photographs. There were the bits of video probably going on. They were showing each other things on their Instagram feeds. But there were one or two of them on tablets or laptops, I can't remember now. And they may well have been working at the same time, submitting assignments at the last minute or whatever. Some of them may have been checking in with their sports groups. It's possible, for all I know, that some of them were connecting with their church. Who knows? But I thought, here is such a blurring of boundaries. This is exactly what Schultz is talking about, because their encounter with each other in a coffee shop that would have just been a face-to-face conversation once upon a time now included people in all sorts of other places, possibly even outside of the UK. And there was that sharing of media from them to others, from others to them, among each other, and a blurring of boundaries probably over the different spheres of life that they were involved in at that moment. So Stig Hjarvard, who's a Danish professor, he says that mediatization has two key developments to it. Firstly, the media is largely autonomous, independent force within society. It's an institution on its own right, but it is an integral aspect of the functioning of everything else: family, church, state, education, absolutely everything. A couple of years ago, a survey was done in the UK of 16 to 24-year-olds of how they spent their time and particularly their media access. And the survey showed that over 13 hours a day was spent by this age bracket engaging with some kind of media content. But a third of that time, interestingly, is because they are communicating, not because it's passive absorption of media, but because they're communicating, presumably about all of the other facets of life. Now, my guess is that they ended up having to have some fairly sharp distinctions. It's a while since I read the report now. But I can imagine that people eating and reading their books are also engaged with media to some extent at that point. I suspect the reality may even be more than 13 hours a day, but 13 hours of exclusively media access a day. But interesting what a big proportion of that was communication, because it is something that pervades all of life. But it presents us with some very significant challenges. Firstly, because people rely on media, people within society as a whole rely on the media increasingly for information about everything. And therefore, that includes religious issues. So Jenny Taylor, who some of us will know, I can't remember whether she's been to the forum, but she's certainly involved in the Lausanne Media Engagement Network. She talks about religious illiteracy in particularly in the UK context, but more widely. And she says it's widespread and it's toxic. So as a result of that, the information that people are getting is half-baked very often. It's inaccurate. It's distorted. So they're relying on media for information, but a lot of that information is misleading, inaccurate, or whatever. the way that we communicate about faith, whether the Christians communicating about faith, but how religion generally is communicated, is shaped by the demands of popular media. So it has to conform to the sound bites of contemporary news and current affairs media, or it has to conform to the narratives within more dramatic narrative media. And so that shapes, again, it shapes the way that media gets that faith and religious elements get communicated. And of course, the media itself has begun to substitute, going back to the second of Schultz's points, it's begun to substitute for some of the cultural and social functions of institutional religion, of the church. It provides spiritual guidance for people. It provides moral orientation for people. It gives people some sense of rites of passage sometimes. It gives people a sense of community and belonging, all things that people would have once upon a time looked to the church for. So there's a huge challenge there. Firstly, there's a challenge to discipleship. David Kinnaman from Barna says that screens disciple young people. So we need to take that very seriously. But secondly, there's a challenge to mission. And I want to say a little bit about both of those in the time that we have. Firstly, discipleship in a mediatized culture. How do we deal with that challenge of mediatization for our discipleship? One of the things I've really valued from David Kinnaman in recent years is, it's a trilogy of studies and books that have come out of it now. But the key one, I think, is Faith for Exiles by David Kinnaman and Mark Matlock. And in that, they talk about five marks that have come out of their five practices that they found in their research into, I think it was millennials primarily, maybe millennials and Generation Z, I need to check again now. But five practices of resilient disciples among basically younger people. And these are their five practices: experiencing Jesus, cultural discernment, meaningful relationships, vocational discipleship, and countercultural mission. And the second of those, of course, is extremely relevant to us: cultural discernment. How do we understand the culture in which we live? When the culture in which we live is completely media saturated, it is a mediatized culture. So cultural discernment has to take very seriously the media reality in which we live. And so media awareness is a very key aspect of that. Now, you'll remember that we talk about these three aspects of media engagement within our network here and within Lausanne: media awareness, media practice, presence, and media ministries. I don't need to say much more about media awareness now, because Anna Zolfrid and Lars covered that on Monday. And in particular, Anna Zolfrid set out a model of four stages, four levels of engaging with media. My model is a little different. But let me just say this, that we need to think in three different planes. Firstly, we need to think about the world behind the text. That is, where does this media message, this media product come from? This film, this television program, this book, this news item, what's going on behind it? What's the context in which it fits, both in terms of the institutions that shape it, the cultural forces that drive it, the people who are responsible for creating it, the sociological forces that are at play that it may be responding to? What's the bigger context, the world behind the text? This is from Paul Ricoeur, of course. The second plane, as I've shown it on my slide, is the world of the text. What is actually going on within the media itself? How do we understand the media messages that are being communicated, both at a worldview level, but also thinking about the aesthetics and the emotional side of it, and how do we respond to that? What's going on with the media products themselves? But then we need to think about the world in front of the text, and that is the audiences of this media product, the film or the book or the television program, the piece of music. And that is us. How do we respond to it? What is it doing to us? What are the people that we're trying to disciple, or the people that we're trying to minister to, or the people that we're trying to reach? What is it doing to all of them? And so in terms of discipleship in a mediatized context, we need to move through those three planes, understanding where this media thing has come from, understanding the media thing in itself, and then understanding what it does to us as human beings. And we need to do that for ourselves as well as for anybody else that we are trying to work with or minister to. Today being my birthday, I was given a very wonderful birthday present, which is a book called Every Moment Holy by Douglas McKelvey, published by Rabbit Room Press. And it's a whole collection of liturgies for all sorts of different bits of life. There's a wonderful one that we printed off from the Rabbit Room website some time ago, a liturgy for feasting with friends that we read sometimes. But I discovered there's a liturgy in there before consuming media. So I'm going to read this. O discerning spirit, who alone judges all things rightly, now be present in my mind and active in my imagination as I prepare to engage with the claims and questions of diverse cultures incarnated in the stories that people tell. Let me experience mediums of art and expression, neither as a passive consumer nor as an entertainment glutton, but rather as one who, through such works, would more fully and compassionately enter this ongoing human conversation of mystery and meaning, wonder and beauty, good and evil, sorrow and joy, fear and love. Is that splendid? I'm going to use this again and again and again in my own discipleship with media. Second aspect is media ministries. Remember, we're still talking about discipleship in the mediatized context. So how can we use media to disciple people? The majority of people in this network actually are from a media ministry background. There are very few of us who are from a primarily media awareness background. There are a few who are from a media presence background. There's a few who overlap, but most of you are from a media ministries background at some level or other. So many of you are already thinking quite hard about how to disciple people through media. But all of us, every church, every Christian leader is learning a lot about that in these lockdown days. How do we do church online? How do we make small groups happen? How can we use the media in order to help people to continue to grow as Christians? So there's been a lot of very good thinking going on. But as we come out of some of the restrictions that we're under and we begin to move into a new normality, we are going to have to do some really careful theological reflection on what we've been doing, as well as pragmatic evaluation. We need to think through what are we doing and how are we doing it and why are we doing it and what are the theological implications of that, so that we don't just do things because they work in the long term, but do we do things because they actually generate growth in people's lives? So I think as there's some important issues to think through for the future. And then thirdly, media presence, which relates to point four of those 5 points, the vocational discipleship thing, because those people, Christians who are in a mainstream media world, they are living out their vocation in that context. So how do we disciple them in particular as Christians in that context? Love to say more about that. We don't have time. So then thinking about mission in a mediatized context, and again, all three aspects of media engagement play into this. The media awareness, I won't say anything more about that because we've covered that already. Secondly, the media ministries, again, some of you in media ministries are using media primarily to reach people rather than to disciple people. But again, what I was saying just now about the theological as well as pragmatic evaluation of what we do, that's not just true for discipleship through media ministry. It's true for outreach through media ministry, but it's true of media awareness. It's true of media presence. We need to be reflecting theologically on what we do, not just at a pragmatic level. And one of my concerns about the church in the West, at least, very often, is that a lot of our thinking is pragmatically driven rather than being really theologically rooted. But I think just in terms of media ministries in relation to mission, whether that be global mission or mission in a much more local context, it relates to the fifth of Kinnaman's points, which is countercultural mission. Because anything that we do as Christians has to be countercultural. That's what we are called to do. We are to be in the world, but not of the world. And there is a very fine balance to be found, isn't there, between, on the one hand, identifying enough with the culture that we live in order to be able to communicate meaningfully into it, but on the other hand, maintaining our distinctiveness from it. That is our constant dilemma in engaging with mainstream media. How do we maintain our distinctiveness but identify with it? So it's a challenge for all of these areas, whether you're in a media presence context, an awareness context, or a ministry context. So we've got to figure out what that balance is. We do not want to be like Demas in 2 Timothy 4, when Paul says, Demas has deserted me, for he loved this world. It's the verb agapao, the same verb as is used in John 3:16, that we often think means self-sacrificing love. But Demas was not self-sacrificingly loving the world in order to abandon Paul. He loved the world too much. He wanted to be in it, like Cypher in The Matrix. So how can we do media ministry in a really countercultural way that connects with people, that grabs people, and yet shows them something radically different? Many of you are thinking that through already. And then finally, media presence. This again relates to point four of those 5 points, vocational discipleship. This is my friend, Francis Annan, who is his film directorial debut was earlier this year with Escape from Pretoria, which I mentioned in my workshop on Monday afternoon. But most of you weren't there, so you won't know that I mentioned it there. So here he is with Daniel Radcliffe and Daniel Weber. I think Escape from Pretoria is a cracking film. It is literally an edge of the seat thriller. The tension does not let up from beginning to end. All five of my family, we were sitting on the edges of our seats with sweaty palms watching this film. But Francis, I've known him for years, since he was the Christian Union, president of the Christian Union in a university near here, studying film studies. And he got me in to lead a film discussion, one of the first ones I'd done. And he got all of his friends, the entire film studies course, to come along into the lecture theatre for the screening of whatever it was we showed. We had the most brilliant discussion. But now, you know, he has had this career of media presence right in the BBC and in the film world, working with now the likes of Radcliffe in order to make stories. And there's a great video of him being interviewed for his church, St. Helens Bishopsgate in London, which you can find on their website, that was recorded or was broadcast just this last Sunday. So we need that kind of media presence role. And people like Francis are in the media and are able to give alternative voices. They're living out that countercultural mission by being distinctively Christian within the mainstream world. It is so important to have Christian voices within the mainstream media. Like Sheridan, who's with us in our network this week. It's great to have Sheridan with us. Sheridan does pause for thought, thought for the day kind of ideas, just brief little nuggets on BBC Radio 2, one of our national radio channels. And he's just got, I don't know, 3-4 minutes, something like that. A little bit of interaction with the presenter, and then he's able to do his little bit. And he just has a gift of being able to draw people in. And just, you can't say very much in that time on national radio, but he can just say enough to begin to bring people in. So we need these kind of alternative voices. And that may be not the situation we're in, but we have to pray for them and figure out how do we find more people in that context to be in those kinds of situations. So in terms of our five aspects of resilient disciples, we need to be thinking through all of those in relation to media. We need to be thinking through all of the implications of those for our media, for our mission within a mediatized world. There's so many implications of this. All I've done this afternoon is say, here are two massive challenges, and I haven't really given any answers. But that all of us need to think that through for ourselves in our own contexts. So 3 questions for you to think about. Within your own fields, how do you see media extending, substituting, merging, demanding to be accommodated, those 4 points from Schultz. Don't spend too long on that, just any significant observations you might have. Secondly, how do you see cultural discernment working out in your particular context, whether it be discipleship or mission? And then what part, whether positive or negative, might media play in relation to the other four of those aspects of resilient discipleship?
So we are moving into our final session, which is a session for reflection and for some applications, also for some prayer together. And we are very privileged to have so many people with us. And we could have asked many of you to do what we have not asked two of our participants to do, but we wanted to have two voices or two persons reflecting on the time we've spent together. And the first one is Rudolf from South Africa. And the second one is Sheridan, we'll almost say partly from Australia, partly from UK, something like that. Yeah. And maybe Sheridan, start with you, since Rudolf had some time for those of us who had the opportunity what was it? Sunday evening, was it? Sheridan, how would you describe yourself in a few words?
Writer, speaker, broadcaster. Australian Christian Radio has kind of pioneered a format of what we could call missional broadcasting. That's something that really you don't hear in many places around the world. So the Australian Christian stations will play mainstream music as well as Christian music. And then that has helped them to build a very large secular following, and then have engaged then in evangelism that way. So I was kind of, you know, discipled in that. And then before moving to the UK, I was hosting a national talkback show that was engaging this group. We would have, in some cases, some stations would have up to 70% of their audience that weren't Christians. Others would be somewhere around 40 to 50%. And so I would be engaging people in that way. Since moving to the UK, I've focused primarily on being an author, conference speaker, but then also, as Tony mentioned in the last session, thank you, I have a privilege to be able to be a Christian presence on BBC on a variety of networks, but primarily Radio 2, which is the largest national broadcaster here. In fact, I think it's the largest in Europe. 12 million listeners weekly, 9 million of those in breakfast. They still have a God spot. Now, these days, it's multi-faith, but I get to be one of the Christian presenters on that. And if you'd like me to explore further what Tony was raising about the balance between both being engaging and also distinctive, I find is the central challenge in being a Christian presence in the mainstream, to come up with something that is both engaging, that grips people, but also is biblically faithful. And it will take me a good day and a half to write a 360-word script to get those two elements working. But I can tell you some wonderful testimonies of things that have happened as a result of that.
Thanks a lot, Sheridan. It's wonderful to have you with us. So, Sheridan, you've been part of the network. I know you've also been multitasking and having to fit in some other things happening. But would you like to share your reflections with us for a few minutes?
First thing that strikes me is it's just amazing that we have simply so many high-quality communicators in Europe. And so this is just a delight to be part of, that we have got this many Christians who are thinking thoughtfully and reflectively and are bringing expertise and skill into this area. So I think that's been the number one thing that's hit me. Secondly, I thought that the storytelling principles that Renee offered a couple of days ago was exceptional. And if we can incorporate more of those into our communication, we will engage the secular heart. I am truly convinced of that. So probably the last decade, I've focused very much on narrative, and whether it be in my public speaking or whether it be in the Radio 2 work, and there is just something powerful. To take that one step further, I'm also wondering whether there's a calling for us as Christian communicators to revive the art form of the parable. I think if we could do that as, and this might require some collaboration with our artists' network that are going on at the same time as we're having our conversations, but to revive the art of the parable, to truly have a sense in which we can give something and just like Jesus kind of say, he who has ears to hear, let him hear and walk away, to have them kind of enter this little universe of a story and kind of get engaged with it. I think there's some work for us to do. I would love to see that happen in a new and fresh way. And then I would also say that what we've just heard from Tony has been very, very, very good. If we take those principles and reflect on them, give some time to them, and also help our people give some time to them. One of the challenges I've had with being involved with this conference is that I've been recording some keynote messages for another conference. And one of those that I'm going to be doing there, I'm going to not hit hard, but the fact is that research out of America shows that American evangelicals are disproportionately prone to both believe and pass on conspiracy theories. Now, I don't know if there's similar research done for Europe, the UK, and elsewhere. My anecdotal evidence is that it would be on par, and maybe Veronica has come up with something as she was doing her research as well. Part of that is the Trump factor. Another part of that is postmodernism. We're kind of having a whole bunch of things come to roost. But I believe that we have a calling as Christian communicators to not just reach people with the gospel, but actually form them to be good citizens as well. I think that's part of our calling. And so I think we need to be somehow engaging our people, whether it be our audiences or whether it be people in our churches, to be discerning about verifiable and unverifiable stories and facts. Because at the moment, evangelical Christians are being tainted with being part of a major problem when it comes to conspiracy theories. So there's a few things just off the top of my head, Lars. And I think we've got a great group of, you know, high quality communicators in the room here, and we can be part of that solution.
Well, as we should say, I think as one could say, that's a lot of food for thought there. Thanks a lot, Sheridan.
Probably too much food for thought. Sorry, I can't.
A lot actually to reflect on. Thanks a lot. And actually, I think we should spend some time now. I had originally thought about Tony and I about a slightly different time schedule, but I think we just should keep the flow and to let Rudolf reflect as well. And since not everyone were able to join us on Sunday evening, maybe Rudolf, you could start by saying a few words about where you are situated and what your focus or your foci are.
Thank you so much, Lars. My focus is very much on using media to communicate with people in such a way that they, in a way, get provoked for the gospel, but also get challenged with the issues of society. So I have a strong heart for helping people to connect one another in networks so that they can work together in sharing the good news and also helping to transform lives and communities. So on a day-to-day level, I work with TWR, Trans World Radio here in Africa, and researching media, researching our audiences and our responses from the audiences. And then I work very closely with Lars and with Tony in the Media Engagement Network of the Lausanne Movement, where we really want to help people to engage better with the media. And beyond that, I'm very much into exploring the future to understand what the future of media looks like and how we can be relevant in our society as we communicate.
The last element would be a secular prophecy, no?
No, not quite, because we as futurists believe we can't know the future, we can anticipate where the future can be, and we can prepare for that. And I think that's all I will say about it now.
Otherwise, we would spend the rest of our time together on that. Yes. So would you like to share some of your reflections, Rudolf?
Yes, I very much echo the words of Sheridan about the importance of story. And so it's very important for us as communicators to tell our stories well. And I see that we have a big role to play in also helping the church to tell the story well, to tell the gospel story well, and to communicate it in all types of platforms and mediums. Then I think it's also very important that we tell the bigger story of God well, and also tell well what he's doing in this world. In other words, that we use our experiences, the what we are experiencing in God's kingdom, and weave that into the grand story of God, so that when our listeners hear what God has done in the Bible, they also see what is he doing nowadays in the world, and how do everyday life experiences connect with the message of the Bible. So the storytelling is really important about what's happened in the past and what is happening right in the future. What I've experienced during this time of ELF, that there are so many interactions about so many topics. So if you look at the communities on the app, there's so many questions being asked, so many themes being thrown around, and that there are lots of conversation that can be picked up this week, but that we can continue on. As communicators, I find that it's so important for us to also bring these messages into our societies. So as we actually talk about what is important and what is really critical for us to engage with, it's really important that even we as communicators also take these conversations to our audiences and help them to really grapple with these issues. So we go beyond just a conference, but the ideas we pick up, we take them further. And so one key outcome, or let's say takeaway I take from this gathering, is that we are very much challenged to see what sort of resources can we develop for people who are in the other networks. Understand there are like about 30 networks in this conference, and many people in the other networks are also beginning to talk about media. Understand even there's a, I think that the theological network is even today exploring how is the media, how is the digital life affecting our spirituality. So the other networks are beginning to talk about the media, and we might want to consider as communicators, how can we provide helpful resources to the apologists, to the church planters, to people who've got small groups that are meeting, so that they can also gain more skills in being able to communicate effectively and how people relate through the media. The main message which I'm really wanting to take out of this conference is that we equip Christian influencers how to actually shape ideas and communicate these ideas. So really what we as media people, media practitioners want to do, we want to help Christian influencers to shape and develop and even explore their own ideas, and that's we maybe give them some tools of how they can refine these ideas so that they can communicate and share these ideas, even maybe proclaim very specific ideas that are coming out of the biblical reflection, out of the experience that are relevant to society. And so overall, that we help people to see how can these ideas come together as general themes, even bring different concepts together so they eventually have compelling stories. It's not just these loose ideas, but they shape an overall story that can be communicated. And then when these Christian influencers, many of whom are at this ELF gathering, when they take these ideas into the mainstream media or even very niche media, or maybe the social media they work with, then these ideas can begin to shape specific concepts or over even the overall society. So I would encourage us, from what we're taking from our own network and also what we've seen in the overall gathering and even the other networks, that we find ways that we can equip people to get these ideas concisely together, find ways to package it well, and then tell a compelling story through whatever media channel people have available. Those are just my reflections that I want to take with us.
Thank you so much for being here. It's been a great privilege and a pleasure to be with you.